Now, it is my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. Please offer a warm Valley Group welcome to Susan A.
Bore my children under fictitious names. It was a disaster. You can imagine the wreckage that I had trying to reconcile who I was, who my kids were, and the high cost of what my bad choice was to run away from home with that man and what it did to our lives and my entire family's life. So my parents got me an attorney. I got off on, you know, probation, and he was still a fugitive. And it took a few years until they finally arrested him, and he spent from 1982 in the state penitentiary until 2004 when he died there. He got hepatitis C, and they wouldn't give him treatment because he had gotten life for murder and all the other charges that he was convicted of. But what happened for me is when I turned myself in, here I was 19, I had two little babies, I had nowhere to live, I had no education, and I had no money. And my parents took me in, and basically they took care of my kids. So at 20, 21, when I could finally get into the bars, I started going, and you know what? It was fun. I deserved to have some fun. You know, I had been through hell, and I loved the bar scene. It was sparkling, and it was dark where I felt like, you know, nobody was going to find out about my secrets, which, by the way, I didn't tell many people about my secrets. And honestly, I had lied so much. I had lied to the detectives. I had lied to myself. I had lied to my family. I really didn't know what the truth was. Deep down, I knew he had murdered somebody. I knew some things went really wrong. But I just buried that stuff. And that's perfect for us alcoholics. I think the majority of us, at least the people that I have worked with, there's been trauma in most of our lives that sets the stage for us that have the disease of addiction. That is a great foundation for that if we don't seek treatment doing something else. And it wasn't long for me that I couldn't control my drinking. In fact, alcohol always affected me differently than other people that I knew. The first time I drank was when I was 14, and I was at my sister's wedding. I was in the wedding, and I remember having a glass of champagne, and the next thing I knew, I was passed out. I missed the reception. They carried me into bed because I passed out at the table. But that's always how alcohol affected me. I don't remember a time where I was able to say, I'm going to stop at the bar and I'm going to have two drinks, maybe three, because it would never be just one. I never said that. But even when I set out to have a couple or when I set out to be home by 9 o'clock, it never happened. And you know what? To summarize my alcoholism, it was 10 years of blackout drinking. I don't remember very much of that 10 years. So from 21 to the age of 31, it's pretty much a blur. I neglected my children. I have two sons, and we lived with my parents the majority of that time, and I left their care in my parents' hands. It was a hassle for me. I was resentful. I didn't want anybody to get in the way of my partying. I ended up in a terrible relationship. They couldn't stand me, their mother. I destroyed a relationship with my family. I used everybody in my family. I pawned my children off to every one of my siblings as often as I could. I had good intentions. You know, I'd leave work, and in those days, we drank and we smoked in the office, and I sound like an old lady. Back in those days. But we would start drinking right at 5 o'clock. And if I started drinking, I could not predict what was going to happen. But what always ended up happening is something that I never planned. I never planned to get home at 4 in the morning and have to get up at 6 and go to work and not see my children for days on end because I kept going out after work. I made a disaster of my finances. Somehow I managed to keep a job, but I did make a mess of my finances. At the end of my drinking, I had to file bankruptcy. And remember, most of that time I spent living with my parents, who never charged me a nickel to live there. I was desperate on the inside. I was so hurting and didn't know what was wrong with me. In 1986, which was 2 years before I got sober, I got arrested for drunk driving. I was at a bar about 8 miles away from where I lived, and I don't remember leaving that bar, but at 3:30 in the morning, I got pulled over 90 miles away from where I lived, and I had driven all that way in a blackout. What's odd about that is I had done that hundreds of times. I am navigationally challenged still to this day, but when I'm drinking, I always got lost. I was always going in circles, and I drove drunk all the time, and it's amazing that I only got arrested once in 10 years. I mean, thousands of times I drove drunk and in a blackout. So, the judge sent me to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I had to go to this school, and I didn't learn a thing. I just sat in pure judgment of everybody that was in the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. You all were old. You all were stupid, because even after 6 months of going to meetings, I could recite chapter 5 without looking at the book, and you guys always had to read it from this paper, and I thought, these people never get it. There's something wrong with them. So I drank for 5 more years, and I was more and more miserable after that 5 years, and what ended up happening is one more time I came home. I don't remember it. At this point, we had moved out from my parents' house. Well, I got engaged to another, I thought, Mr. Wright, and he was a heroin addict alcoholic, so that was good. But that didn't last very long. The day my kids and I had to move out of my parents' house, their safe haven, and we moved into this apartment with this guy, and the day we move in, he is OD'd in our new apartment and flopping all over the bathroom with blood everywhere. I still let him move in, but my poor kids, those poor kids, I put him through such hell. Anyway, that lasted only about 6 months. I bought myself my own engagement ring and everything like that. And he ended up stealing, all my checks and everything else we do when we're crazy and need our dope and our alcohol. So I was living with my kids as a single mom in our own little place. And it was right before the 4th of July weekend. And one more time, I was drinking before I left work, and I don't remember coming home, but somebody brought me home because my car wasn't there. But when I came to in the morning, my kids weren't there. And at this time, they were 9 and 10, so they're not old enough to be by themselves overnight. And so I started calling as many people as I could find, and I couldn't find him. So what they ended up sitting with a friend, but it scared me. It scared me, and I thought, God, how many times is this going to happen? why does this keep happening? What is wrong with me? And you know what? I could not put it together that it was the alcohol that was making me so crazy. I just thought I was crazy. Because I wasn't going to give up the alcohol. That was my friend. That was fixing me. That was making me feel okay. At least in my mind, that's what I thought. But that wasn't the truth. I have a younger sister, and at the time, she had been going to Alcoholics Anonymous, and NA, by the way. She was a coke addict and an alcoholic. At least that's what she said at the time. And she lived in Arizona, and I had shared with her a little bit of what happened, that I came home and shit, the boys were gone, and, you know, she probably was just like, yeah, that's what we do. And she was coming to visit, and she said, when I come out there, I have to go to a meeting. And I said, cool. That's good. You probably need to do that. And so she said, please go with me. I don't know anybody in your town, and I don't want to go by myself. And she, I'm sure, was setting me up. But I went with her, and it was a Tuesday night book study, Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. And when they said, are there any newcomers, she sat beside me, and she was like, yeah, raise your hand, raise your hand. And I did. And she said, you've got 30 days. Because this was in August when she came to visit. The last time I drank was right before 4th of July weekend. My sobriety day, I told you, was July 6, 1991. On or about July 6th. Something happened to me that night. You know, I didn't plan to be participating in Alcoholics Anonymous that night. I didn't plan on admitting that I had a problem. But this is going to sound crazy, but what happened is there were so many nice people there. There was a man, and you know what, he wasn't even attractive. He wasn't trying to pick up on me or anything. So I was cute back then, probably, but he brought me a little index card that said, here's some really good meetings in Cyprus. I got sober in Cyprus, down south. And he said, and here's a couple that are even just women only. And I thought, my gosh, he doesn't even know me. Why would he be so kind, you know? But he did. He had no other motive except to give me a list, his own handwritten list, of where there were some good meetings in Cyprus. I told you that that meeting was a book study. And I am still such a rebel at heart. I wouldn't read the book. I wouldn't ask for help. Tonight, I wouldn't even come sit up here because several people told me that's what I had to do. And I was like, I sit up there. Nobody's going to tell me where I got to sit. I want to sit with my friends. I'm sitting right here. You know, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. I'm working on my defective character. That one I like. I don't like anybody to tell me what to do, but I am learning that the people that I work for, they get to tell me what to do. I don't have to say anything back to them. I don't have to say what comes in my mind. Anyway, like I said, something happened to me that night. There just somehow became an ounce of willingness and some intrigue. Something intrigued me about that meeting, and I went back. And I don't have a story about saying, I found a sponsor and I asked for help. I didn't. Unfortunately, my character defects of being prideful and selfish and stubborn and rebellious, I hadn't had an opportunity to work on any of that yet. But I had an ounce of willingness. And you know what? If you can find just an ounce of willingness, I am here to tell you that's what it it became a miraculous change for me, for that ounce of willingness. That meeting became my home group. I went to that meeting for 10 years, religiously, every week. You know why? Because I wouldn't read the damn book. And it was a book study. Within 6 months, I had fully conceded to myself I was an alcoholic. I thought I had to be homeless, and I thought I had to be broke and without a job, all sorts of things to be an alcoholic. I thought you had to be a man. I got a job. I come from a good family. There are other alcoholics in my family, but my parents aren't. Several of my brothers and sisters have struggled with drugs and alcohol, and my baby sister, who was there when I got sober, she can drink like a lady now, she says. It's been for a while. She hasn't done any cocaine, so you know what? It's not up to me to decide. But it was up to me to decide and really admit to myself that I was an alcoholic. And when I finally heard enough about alcoholism, I couldn't believe the relief that I felt. But that's what was wrong with me. That's why I couldn't manage my life. Again, my rebellious nature got in the way, and it took me 6 months to ask for help. I wish it didn't take that long. It doesn't have to take that long. You can ask anybody to help you. A sponsor is just somebody that can help you work the steps that has done them, and they can show you what they've been taught. And I had all these notions in my mind that were just BS about what a sponsor is. Today, I truly believe, I am not a life coach. I have some living experience, and I'd be happy to share the experience of the things that I have gone through. But people will ask me questions, what should I do about taking this medicine or adopting this child? And it's like, I don't know. I don't have any experience with that. Maybe write a list of pros and cons and see how it comes out. But a sponsor, I believe, is somebody that can help you work the steps, because the steps is what has saved my life. I never would have been able to unravel all of those years of being beaten and being terrible to myself and neglecting my children and all those emotions that just made me feel like less than a person should feel. So after step one, wow, I couldn't believe the difference that I felt. And without drinking, because I was going to meetings, and I wasn't drinking in between. And I couldn't believe how quickly I felt like I could hold my head up just a little bit higher and have some self-dignity and feel like maybe I wasn't just a worthless piece of crap. And I didn't know why I was here on this earth. My step two was kind of funny. At 90 days sober, I decided it'd be a really great idea if I could quit smoking. Because, it would help me. I was in a financial mess, and cigarettes cost me a lot of money. I smoked at least a pack a day. But I remember I'm standing in the shower. Maybe this will get it. I'm standing in the shower. I'm going to go crazy. I can't stand it. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore my sanity. That's what that means. And I called my sponsor, and I was like, wow. She's like, are you still not smoking? I said, no, I'm having a cigarette, but I got to tell you. I'm ready to do my second step, because I believe I know now. I know that a power greater than myself can restore my sanity. And for me, that was my step two. And at step three, that took me right into that place where I was asking my sponsor, so I don't know how to turn my life and my will over to the care of God. I don't know how to do that. I don't think I can do that. And you know what she said? I was so glad that I had somebody that had some experience more than I did. She said, it doesn't say that, Suzanne. It said, make a decision. Made a decision to turn my life, our life, and our will over to the care of God. And so I thought, okay, I can make a decision. I can do that. I decide. That's what I want. She's like, okay, now let's pray the third step prayer. And that's what we did. And, you know, that one, I because of my rebellious nature, me and God have struggled. I know that. Because I want to be in charge. And it's so much better when I let Him, when I let things be, when I pray ahead of time and say, this is yours. Just let me be the messenger. Let me be a vessel. So the quitting smoking thing really helped me with those steps. Step four changed my life. It absolutely changed my life. When I was reading the 12 and 12, my sponsor said, before we sit down, I want you to first read the 12 and 12, read through step four. And I don't know if you guys have read in there, but the questions that they ask in there are very, very specific. In fact, I was like, oh, how could they ask me? I got to look at my sex inventory and what? How? What does this have to do with my drinking? Because I had never, ever did a moral inventory of Suzanne's. It was always about, well, you know what, if they would have just done this, or if he would have never done this, or if those kids, this, this, and this. But it had never been looking at myself and actually writing on paper what it was all about. Who did I resent? What did he do? And this one was a big one for me. How did it make me feel? And then the last part of that, you know, where have I done anything that was selfish or dishonest? That was heavy stuff for me. And it took me quite a while. My little sister actually helped me quite a bit. She had done a really great fourth step, and she helped me with mine. And I would encourage you guys, if you haven't found somebody where you feel like you can trust to share a fifth step, keep looking. This is so important. It absolutely turned my world upside down, and I felt like a new woman. I felt like I could go on living. And up until I did that fifth step, I did not feel like I could. I felt like I had this weight on my shoulders that I just couldn't lift my head up. I still couldn't look anybody in the eye. So my fifth step was an amazing release for me. Six and seven, I still humbly ask God to remove my shortcomings. And without a format like we have in our steps, I don't know where else I would have gotten any of this. I belong to a church today. They don't really have anything like this. I was brought up in a religious home. I still respect that religion. They never had anything like this. I've never found it anywhere else where it so clearly outlined the steps we can do to help unravel the crazies that we create when we're alcoholics. It was so funny because I'm kind of rolling into my eighth step here, that it was really hard because I hadn't really looked at who I had harmed. Because I had never really looked at my responsibility in my life, and making that list, I was just wowed by the harm that I had done. And for most of us, for me too, it was my family, my children, and my mom and dad, and the rest of my siblings who I used and took for granted for so many years. But having the opportunity to sit down, my boys were 11 and 12 when I got sober, and to be able to sit down as they became teenagers, it wasn't easy, because to be perfectly honest, they despised me. And just because I stopped drinking didn't mean I discontinued any of my bad behavior, because some of my bad behavior did continue, and they suffered from that. It was my son, Joe, was in a wood shop. I think he was a junior. And I walked in his room one day, and he goes, "Check it out, look what I made." And it was a piece of wood, and he had written the word, or he made the word hate, and in wood shop. And I just thought, oh my God, God help me. I don't know how to help this little boy that has just suffered so much. And you know what? All I could do was say, you know what? This that I didn't do, I was so wrong. It didn't get fixed right away. But I have to tell you, over the years, I have had an amazing relationship with those boys. You know, they had a tough life. They had a father who was sentenced to prison when they were babies. They never got to see him, although my youngest said, "I want to go meet him. I want to know who he is. I want to know what he did." And he did. He went a couple times, and he was grateful that he did that. My other son said, "I don't want nothing to do with that sperm donor." So that was his prerogative, too. But they were still stuck with me. And when I was first going to AA meetings, I felt so guilty for leaving them, because for a couple of years, I went to a meeting every day, sometimes three meetings a day, early in the morning, on my lunch hour, and on my way home from work, because you know what I used to do on my way home from work. And it was a scary time for me. I have a wonderful relationship with my boys today. I'll just finish up with the 11th and 12th step and then wrap it up. But meditation has not been an easy thing for me. In fact, this year I made a new commitment, and every morning I go into our guest bedroom and I have meditation time with God. And it has changed. This year has my attitude, at least I feel like, I don't know if Phil notices anything, but I have felt like I've been grounded because I've been doing that. So I want to improve my conscious contact with God. And with step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, carrying this message to other alcoholics has changed my life. Before I moved here, I still was not very open-minded about women's meetings, all women. I just hadn't done it in my sobriety. Maybe at 5 years sober, I went to one, but me and my sponsor both went, "We don't like that meeting." And so I just didn't go. When I moved here, yeah, and it was hard. I missed my home group. I missed all the people that I had become friends with and took for granted. And nobody here in Visalia did meetings like they did down there. And I didn't stay very connected at first. I kind of went from one meeting to another, and it took me a while. And truth be told, I think Bill really helped me when I met him. You know, he was on fire for AA then, and he's on fire for AA now. And I watched him, and I was just, I knew that's what was missing in my life. But you know what I had to do? I had to be the one to say, "Hey, I'm Suzanne. How are you doing? And I'm new here, you know. What's going on around here? And who are you? And how long have you been here?" Just like I did in the beginning. I can't sit here and expect people to say, "Oh, are you new?" I need to be the one. I need to be the one. So I'm not so new anymore, but the women here in Alcoholics Anonymous have been an amazing blessing in my life. And lastly, you know, in that step four, there's a place where we take a sex inventory that I mentioned before, and sex ideals. And that's not about sex, that's about relationships, right? And so who would know that I would go from my list of ideals before, it was like, okay, biker, got a nice motorcycle and maybe has a job and long hair, which there's nothing wrong with that, don't get me wrong, but my list of ideals was really short. I was shortchanging myself. So when I made that list, I want someone honest. And I want a partner that I can trust. And I want somebody that respects me, and I respect him. And I want somebody where we share financial goals and spiritual goals. And you know what? I had to get down to, and I want somebody that doesn't smoke, because you know what? It was harder than hell for me to quit smoking. And I can't be around that. I couldn't have married a drinker either. I just can't. I don't want to be around. And so, you know, God bless singlesnet.com, which is how I met my husband, Bill. We've been married a little over 5 years. And you know what? That just goes to show you that God is in charge, and that he could take somebody like me who was so broken, not only on the inside, but, you know, on the outside, too. I had teeth missing. I had stomach ulcers. I had swallowed pills, 10 aspirin, because I didn't want to have a bad hangover in the morning. And they all got stuck, and they burned a hole in my esophagus, and I had to eat baby food. That was all because of alcohol. And, you know what? I haven't had any alcohol since July 6, 1991. That's a damn miracle. I could have never done it without Alcoholics Anonymous and all of the diverse people in Alcoholics Anonymous. I love that about it. I didn't have to be a certain height or weight, which all my life, you know, one of the things I struggled with when I went to Weight Watchers when I was drinking, I was like, I'm just going to drink because I don't want all those calories of food. You know that's a problem drinker to be able to conjure that up in my head. But, anyway, I never could have done it without Alcoholics Anonymous. I could not stop drinking. My life was unmanageable because of alcohol. And I'm so grateful. Let me just read something that I just fell in love with when I read it. About us women. In case you're wondering, anyway, it's been more about alcoholism. And it talks about women, and it basically says, women will go down really quickly. And that was my story, too. Oh, here it is. Sorry. To be gravely affected, one does not necessarily have to drink a long time, nor take the quantities some of us have. This is particularly true of women. Potential female alcoholics often turn into the real thing and are gone beyond recall in a few years. So just in case you're wondering, you know what, I was only 31 when I got here, and I was a full-blown alcoholic. So thank you again for the